from KXJZ in Sacramento. This is Insight. I'm Jeffrey Callison. Coming up, the national political conventions are just ahead. What do a couple of young delegates, one a Democrat, the other a Republican, think of Barack Obama and John McCain? Also, why some parents want their three-year-olds to attend an all-day immersion program in Mandarin Chinese. But first, 18 charter schools are opening in New York City this fall. Why is that news in Sacramento? Well, because one of them is a St. Hope Leadership Academy, part of the small but growing group of schools started by Kevin Johnson, a candidate for Sacramento mayor. The first St. Hope's, which includes Sacramento Charter High School, are controversial and for several reasons. We'll recall that in a little while, but first, let's find out what's going on with the new St. Hope. KXJZ news reporter Ben Adler is in New York covering the story, and he joins us from public radio station WNYC. Ben, welcome back to Insight.
Thanks. I've always wanted to say, you know, live from New York, and I guess I can now.
Indeed. Well, why is St. Hope opening a school in Harlem?
Well, I think Kevin Johnson and St. Hope have always felt that their mission is to try and revitalize underserved inner city communities. Harlem's certainly one of those communities. And St. Hope says that a Harlem parent asked Kevin Johnson at an education conference about 2.5 years ago to bring St. Hope to Harlem, and that's how it all got started.
Tell us where the school is. What kind of building is it in? What's the neighborhood like and so on?
Well, it's on 134th Street in Harlem, not far from 7th Avenue. It's an old public school building. St. Hope actually shares space with a couple other schools there right now. But they are starting a brand new school. It's not that's the closest comparison to, for example, PS7, which is their K-8 elementary and middle charter in Sacramento, which is a brand new site, as opposed to Sacramento High School, which, as many of our listeners might remember, St. Hope took control of the operations and began operating it as a charter school back in 2003. So this they are doing that here as well. It's an existing school building, but it's a brand new school. They're not kicking anyone out. It's an old school. There's, you know, loud AC, air conditioning throughout the halls and the rooms and all that. In fact, one floor doesn't have air conditioning. And it's a typical Harlem neighborhood. It's very diverse. It's low income. You know, there's a lot of small businesses on the busy streets. And then there's apartment buildings, of course, on the smaller streets.
Ben Adler, KXJZ news reporter, is in New York covering the opening of the new St. Hope Leadership Academy in Harlem. Well, Ben, you went to the school, and I know that you recorded a scene in a classroom, and we're going to listen to that right now, then we'll talk about it. This is a teacher who's coaching students on a crossword puzzle.
When you think you're done, you've only just begun. So if you did a word search, you can do a crossword puzzle as well. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. As long as you have those down.
All right.
Where's all the core values in it? Where's honor, absolute determination, respect, leadership, excellence, mission-driven.
I use the pillars, that's right.
Okay, you're not supposed to only use the pillars. You have to use the core values. And then pillars and the pledge are things that you add for your choice. Okay, so 6 plus whatever choice you want. Right? You understand that now?
Mm-hmm.
Bam, what are those core values the teacher's talking about?
Well, they are it's the acronym HARLEM. So honor, absolute determination, responsibility, leadership, excellence, and then they kind of cheat a little bit on the last one. It's being mission-driven, the M, mission-driven. And those are the core values that they expect their students to follow day in and day out in class and out of class.
It might sound like a stricter environment than the typical public school.
I think it almost certainly is more strict than a typical public school, but that's what St. Hope is known for doing. They believe in a very rigorous, structured, disciplined environment. And they believe that that is a way for students to thrive.
You also talked with the principal of the St. Hope Leadership Academy in Harlem. His name is Ventura Rodriguez. And you talked with him about the way the kids get from classroom to classroom.
During hallway time is a lot of times when you have, bullying happen, fights happen. You're getting a school culture that you're working hard to build during the school day actually being destroyed. So what we're trying to do is have very structured passing times with the idea and goal of easing it up so students are able to transition on their own, making good choices. But we're assuming that we have to teach them that rather than letting them make mistakes and then addressing it that way.
So what exactly happens?
Well, this was something that really struck me. What happens, I mean, well, think back for a moment, you know, Jeffrey, to your middle school days, you know, the bell's just rung and, you know, everyone's in the hallway streaming from one class to the next. It was loud, right?
Mm-hmm.
It was very quiet here. They have different levels of noise, and they were at a level zero, which is complete silence. There were, you know, 150 fifth, sixth, and seventh graders walking silently down the hall, single file, hugging the wall, split into six classes, about 25 kids each, and a teacher watching each class like a hawk. And the goal there, again, is, as we heard from the principal, is to cut down on bullying and fighting and keep everyone disciplined.
I guess it's hard for you to tell or to see, but did you get the impression that the students seemed happy to be there?
Well, the one I spoke with afterwards seemed very happy, and her mom did as well. You know, it's hard to tell. This was the very first full day of school that I was there for. It was last Thursday. There was an orientation session Wednesday afternoon. The first day of class was Thursday. And so I think that this was probably new to a lot of these kids. They probably hadn't gone through this at their past school. And I think there was probably some getting used to.
Well, we'll listen to the parent and the student. Tell us who they are first, though.
It's Myrna Burke is the mother, and her daughter is sixth grader Victoria. And last year, Victoria was at another school, a public school, I think. And this is what they had to say about what they like about St. Hope.
The point I like most is that the school prepares the children to be leaders. I like their mission statement. They try to self-motivate these children to be independent thinkers and then therefore to become leaders in their community.
It's a really structured day, isn't it?
We're moving around to different classes. You get like eight subjects a day. Very good.
And what do you think of the culture and the atmosphere? That, you know, it's very different from other schools.
It is very different, but it's going to help us later on in life.
Absolutely. It keeps them structured. It gives them a better interaction with each other as students there because they're more calm. You know, they're very tight here. They keep it very tight.
Ben, Kevin Johnson was there for the opening of the St. Hope Leadership Academy. He lives, of course, in Sacramento, but he went out to New York for this opening. And as most people in this area know, Kevin Johnson has had on again, off again, difficult times with the teachers union here and with certain members of the educational establishment in Sacramento. How did he seem in New York?
You know, New York is very different from Sacramento. It sounds like a very obvious statement. It is obvious, but there's different degrees of that. I mean, you look at the political atmosphere in New York. You have a mayor and a chancellor very supportive of charter schools. In Sacramento, the political environment is less friendly towards charter schools. It was, I think, St. Hope found it a lot easier to get things up and running here. In terms of, you know, how Kevin's received, I think he's here a lot less. People don't know him as well, and so I think they just know him a little bit more superficially as the former NBA player. Beyond that, I think Sacramentoans have had a chance to get to know Kevin a lot more, and they know there's a lot more to him than just being a basketball star. I don't necessarily know that the average person in Harlem, other than knowing the basketball and knowing that he's into education and into charter schools, I'm not sure how much more they know about Kevin specifically.
Okay, let's listen to some of what Kevin Johnson said.
The goal was never for me to run St. Hope in Sacramento. The goal was never for me to be as hands-on as I've been. You do that when you have to do it. You do it when you don't have the resources that you need to. You problem solve and you do whatever it takes. But our goal all along was to build an institution that would live a lot longer than Kevin Johnson or any of us are around. You know, it's going to be a hard road to do that, but we're on trajectory to make that happen. And my goal was to never be a person that was indispensable, to actually be dispensable. And the work that we're doing in Sacramento has nothing to do with what I'm doing now. I was a part of a team of people that laid the foundation and created the frameworks. And here in Harlem, those frameworks in Sacramento are what we're implementing. And you walk around and you look at it, and it's a St. Hope school. And St. Hope has to be synonymous with excellence in terms of schools, and I think we're taking a step in that direction.
But Ben, haven't we heard that former employees of St. Hope in Sacramento, haven't we heard more than one of them saying that he was too hands-on in Sacramento?
We have. But the difference there is, well, 3,000 miles. It's a lot harder to be hands-on when you are running for mayor, when you, you know, as Kevin would like to be, might be running a city in a few months. And so I think that's his point, among other things, is he's moving on. He has officially, he likes to say he's officially stepped down as CEO of St. Hope, and he doesn't have any day-to-day control over the organization right now. So I think, you know, the Harlem thing, that was something he started working on, you know, 28 months ago, I think they said. And Kevin is someone who is I think it's well known, he pays great attention to results. He's very results driven. Some of the complaints about him aren't necessarily the kids going to college. I don't think people are complaining about that. It's how he goes about getting them there that has angered some people in Sacramento. And so I think that this is a situation where he's ready to let St. Hope go in its direction. And I'm sure he'll keep in touch with them and say, here are some ideas I have. But as far as New York, I don't think that Kevin is going to have a strong day-to-day role at all.
KXJZ News reporter Ben Adler is on assignment in New York. A couple of years ago, St. Hope announced that it was going to take over the famous Choir Academy of Harlem. And we talked on Insight with a woman called Tanya Morgan, who'd been hired by St. Hope to be the new principal there. Obviously, that hasn't worked out. What happened?
Well, that's actually what I spent a fair amount of time here going through and trying to figure out. But the gist of it is that in 2006, the city kicked the choir out of its longtime home, the Boys Choir of Harlem, out of its longtime home at the Choir Academy of Harlem, which is the school they were at. The city's Department of Education cited, you know, financial and management problems. The president of the academy's PTA asked Kevin to bring St. Hope into Harlem and rescue the school. But negotiations, from what I can tell, went sour. The city and Johnson decided to go against the PTA's wishes and try to run the school anyway. The city and Kevin Johnson both issued press releases about that. City and St. Hope issued press releases saying, you know, there's a partnership between St. Hope and the city and the schools to revitalize the Choir Academy of Harlem. And the PTA didn't like it very much, and they complained. And eventually, because of those objections and because there were a couple of lawsuits involving the PTA and the choir and the city, I think the city and St. Hope both felt, you know what, let's move on. Let's try to find a different site, a new site for St. Hope to start a brand new school, which ended up being the location on 134th Street where they just opened last week.
In New York, you also talked with Kevin Johnson. Well, you asked him, to compare the political and funding challenges in New York and Sacramento, and here's what he said.
We got local and community support. We got the chancellor and the school district support, Department of Ed. We've got the mayor's support. We got a facility. All those things were taken off the table before we came. The per pupil expenditures, dollars, are a lot more favorable in Harlem, New York, than they are in Sacramento. Sacramento, you get $7,000 plus per kid. Out here, you get $12,000 or so per kid. So it's very significant. There's more dollars to actually go into the classroom. And something that I think it's important for Sacramento people to know, we have to pay $500,000 to rent the Sacramento High School facility. In Harlem, they give you the facility for free or a dollar because they look at you as helping educate their children. And I would like to see more of that in Sacramento.
Do you know how Kevin Johnson and St. Hope get on with the teachers' unions in New York? Because relations are very contentious in Sacramento.
I called the teachers' union and I asked about St. Hope, and they quite honestly didn't know very much. And I think the possible reason for that could be, well, there are 18 brand new charter schools opening this fall. Many of them are, I don't know how many of them are replacing existing schools. St. Hope is not. And it's certainly possible, and this is, you know, speculation on my part, but it's possible that they're focusing elsewhere. This is, you know, obviously a huge city, huge school district, 1.1 million kids in New York City schools, and St. Hope is serving 150 of them. So it could just be that the union has a lot of other things on its mind.
Now, there's a federal investigation of St. Hope. And you talked about that with someone in the New York City Department of Education. But first, just quickly remind us what the feds are looking into.
Sure. The feds are looking into the potential misuse of federal funds by Hood Corps, which is St. Hope's after-school inner-city AmeriCorps-style volunteer program, whether those funds were were used for a program that required religion, that required exercise, that required political campaigning, that perhaps had – let's see. Always hard to find the most accurate way of saying this. There are a couple other things looking into as well involving the use of teachers and how they were paid and the use of students, the Hood Corps members, and what their activities included.
And you talked with Michael Thomas Duffy, who heads the New York City Department of Education's Charter School Office, and you asked him what, if anything, about the federal investigation would concern him.
I guess I'd want to understand what extent, if any, financial support from the parent St. Hope to the local St. Hope and how that might be affected. That's one. I think second, if there are any policies and procedures that need to be addressed that come out of the federal audit, we'd want to make sure that those were put in place. Any controls, financial controls that need to be put in place, segregation of accounts and the flow of funds, federal funds, state funds, local Department of Education funds, making sure that those are strictly accounted for.
And the feds, in fact, are looking into an aspect of the previous choir academy issue where St. Hope was looking at perhaps taking over the Choir Academy of Harlem.
Yeah, 2 years ago, St. Hope sent a group called its Junior Task Force to Harlem to, in the words of St. Hope's Pipeline newsletter, build relationships between St. Hope, the Harlem community, and the Boys Choir of Harlem. At least some, if not all, of the teens on that trip were Hood Corps members, and a former employee says it was promoted as a Hood Corps trip. So in the words of the Inspector General for the federal office that awards the AmeriCorps grant, the grant's provisions control what the money can be used for. So St. Hope said its work would be done in Sacramento, not New York. If Hood Corps members counted their work in Harlem towards their 1,700 hours of AmeriCorps community service, then that would violate the grant. Now, for Johnson's part, I did ask him about this specifically. He said it was, to his knowledge, 100% compatible with the Hood Corps grant, and he said overall St. Hope did not intentionally do anything that did not comply with the grant's terms.
The mayor of New York City, Michael Bloomberg, I've read in the papers that Kevin Johnson knows him and seems to get on quite well with him. Michael Bloomberg is a quote-unquote strong mayor. In other words, he's a mayor who has a lot of power, who controls the schools. Now, Kevin Johnson is running for mayor of Sacramento. That's a quote-unquote weak mayor position. He does not control the schools. Did you talk about that with Kevin Johnson?
I did. You know, I asked him if he thought that that was something he might want to do if he won mayor of Sacramento. He does say that the strong mayor system and there being the mayor having control of the schools, those are preconditions for St. Hope coming to another town. For example, he's looking at Chicago and Washington, D.C. as the two next possible destinations for St. Hope schools. And both of those have strong mayor systems with control over the school. And he said, as for Sacramento, it's two separate questions. First, should Sacramento have a strong mayor system? Johnson has said throughout the campaign that is worth taking a look at. His campaign, I know, has pulled the strong mayor concept and it's gotten positive feedback. And there's also definitely talk around town that if Johnson wins, he'll push for a strong mayor ballot measure as soon as he's sworn in, or rather soon after he's sworn in. But the school control issue, according to Johnson, is completely separate. And he didn't really say if he's thinking about it. He says he doesn't know if it would be worthwhile in Sacramento. It is clear, though, that in cities like New York, Chicago, D.C., and so on, he likes that system of mayoral control. For example, all three cities are interested in charter schools. So I do think it's fair to say that it's on his radar.
Mm. And finally, Ben, Kevin Johnson's supporters and detractors in Sacramento, what do you think they can each take out of what's going on with St. Hope in New York?
You know, I think they'll both find evidence that supports their views. Supporters can talk about the work that Kevin and St. Hope have done here and about the 150 kids that they're serving and right now and the 200-student waiting list. They can point to support from the mayor and the chancellor. Opponents, meanwhile, can point to the Choir Academy episode to back up their view that Kevin Johnson and St. Hope kind of seem to frequently end up alienating a segment of the community wherever they go.
Ben Adler, KXJZ news reporter. He's in New York on assignment covering the opening of the new St. Hope Leadership Academy in Harlem. He joined us from a public radio station, WNYC. Ben, thanks so much for all this.
It's great to be out here, and we look forward to coming back and putting a story on the air on our newscast.
Yeah, which will be next week, I believe. Great. Thanks so much.
Yeah.
You're listening to Insight from KXJZ. Coming up, the national political conventions are just ahead. What do a couple of young delegates, a Democrat and a Republican, think of Barack Obama and John McCain? We'll be right back. Listening to Insight from KXJZ, I'm Jeffrey Callison. We're looking for interns for Insight. It's a great opportunity for students of communications, public policy, and several other majors. Go to the careers page at capradio.org for details. The life and music of the late folk singer Utah Phillips is celebrated with tribute concerts this weekend. Tomorrow in Insight, you'll meet Utah's son and hear him play one of his father's songs. Also, blues and soul singer Maria Muldaur on why she's getting active in politics. And Angels Camp-based band Clandyken looking back on their first 20 years and about to head off to Burning Man. With the national political conventions coming up, we wondered what young Republican and Democratic delegates think of John McCain and Barack Obama. In our studio is Ryan Loney, delegate to the Democratic National Convention. He's a student at UC Davis and is Northern California Regional Coordinator with Students for Barack Obama. On the phone joining us from San Jose is Jennifer Rodriguez, a delegate to the Republican National Convention, and she's chair of the California Young Republicans. Ryan, Jennifer, welcome to Insight.
Thank you.
I'd like to start by finding out what each of you thinks of the other party's presumptive nominee. Let's start with Jennifer Rodriguez. Jennifer, what do you think of Barack Obama?
I think he is a very talented orator, and I give him, you know, all the credit in the world for mobilizing, you know, my generation. I think anyone that, you know, can get people excited about the upcoming election deserves some credit.
What if he were president? What do you think he would be like as president?
I'm very nervous of that thought. I'm very apprehensive of a senator with, you know, with the most liberal voting record in the U.S. Senate. I don't think that reflects the majority of Americans, and I would be quite frightened at the possibility of him being in the White House.
Okay. And Ryan, what do you think of John McCain?
Well, I certainly respect John McCain for his public service and dedication to his position in the Senate, and I respect him for his service in Vietnam. But in terms of seeing him as president, I just think he would be a continuation of the failed policies of the past 8 years in terms of continuing the war in Iraq and irresponsible spending, and I don't share his vision for our country, and I think that the 80% of Americans right now who think the country is going in the wrong direction would like to see change.
Jennifer, let's talk first of all about the war in Iraq. Jennifer, what did you make of it when John McCain said something along the lines of he could see the U.S. staying in Iraq for, I think it was 100 years?
Well, that line was completely taken out of context, and what Senator McCain said was that he would not call for an immediate withdrawal of troops until we were secure and we had won the war, is what he said, you know, whether that be 100 years, but that was completely taken out of context. And I think to use something like that against somebody whose, you know, son has just got back from serving in that war is quite distasteful.
What do you think the U.S. should do about Iraq?
I think that, you know, we're in the right direction now. I think that we are, you know, we've seen improvements in the country, and I think that we have an obligation to remain there until the country is stabilized. But once it is, that we do, you know, need to get our troops home.
Barack Obama has talked about 16 months, bringing most U.S. troops back. Does that sound reasonable to you?
You know, he's gone back and forth on that. I know that was, you know, kind of his, you know, most recent effort. But once again, I would have to say that I would leave it up to General Petraeus and the commanders in Iraq to determine. I don't believe in setting timetables.
Ryan, what do you think about Barack Obama's position on this? When he was an Illinois state legislator, he spoke against the war before it started. He now says maybe 16 months, not all troops back. He'd wait to talk with the generals. What do you think about Barack Obama's position on the U.S. in Iraq?
Before I go on with his position, I definitely do agree with Jennifer, one of Jennifer's points, in that a lot that 100-year statement has been taken out of context by a lot of people and exaggerated, just as many of Senator Obama's positions have as well. But I think that Barack Obama's plan for phased withdrawal, 1 to 2 brigades a month, depending on what's going on the ground and what General Petraeus or whoever the generals on the ground tell us what the status is, I certainly think that's a great idea. And the Prime Minister of Iraq, Maliki, has endorsed this idea and says that they're ready for us to leave and that they're prepared to take over their country.
I've heard some people who are strongly against the war in Iraq express some concern about a possible softening in Barack Obama's position in the war. Do you share that?
Well, I think that some of that's just a little bit of an exaggeration by the media and by other sources. But I think that he's being very reasonable. He wants to bring all of our troops home, and it's not going to happen overnight. We need to be as careful coming out as we were careless going in, which is something that Barack Obama has said many times, even in the earliest days of his candidacy. So I don't think he's shifted too much on that.
We're talking about what two Northern California young delegates to the national conventions think about the presumptive nominees for the respective parties. Jennifer Rodriguez on the phone is a Republican, and Ryan Loney in our studio is a Democrat. Let's talk about the economy now. Jennifer Rodriguez, it's widely held that the John McCain's strong suit is foreign affairs, national security, and so on. Do you think he needs shoring up on economic matters?
No, I do not. I think that his, you know, pro-job creation and pro-growth creation policy and tax policy that he's laid out shows that he's ready to handle this economy from day one as commander-in-chief. And I think that, you know, his foreign affairs experience and his experience 20, you know, years as a U.S. senator will reinforce this. And, of course, you know, a vice president that can, you know, help balance out the ticket, you know, would be great. But I am completely confident in his ability to tackle these issues.
Yeah. And Ryan, what do you make of Barack Obama's economic policies?
What I like about his economic policy is that he wants to tax the much wealthier people equally with people who are making less money in this country, and also giving tax breaks to middle-class Americans, people making less than $250,000 a year, people who are struggling to pay for their kids to go to college and struggling to survive with high gas prices and with high energy costs and higher costs because of higher gas prices.
Ryan, I just read that John McCain has taken the lead in a new opinion poll over Barack Obama. Very narrow lead, 47% to 46%. Are you surprised by that? And in any case, why do you think Barack Obama is behind in at least this opinion poll?
Well, I'm actually not surprised at all that he's ahead. I've actually been waiting for this to happen for a while, just based on how the polling is done. The people that are being called and surveyed right now, the 1,000 or so people in the sample data, are people who voted in the past 2, 3, 4 elections and who consistently vote. And Barack Obama has brought thousands of, if not hundreds of thousands of people into the political system, like students like myself who have not voted in the past. And those people aren't being called. Cell phones aren't being called. New voters aren't being called. And those aren't, it's not really a true representation of the people that I predict will come out and vote on November 4th.
Jennifer, did you always support John McCain in this current presidential campaign? In other words, before the primaries?
Yes, absolutely. I've been a supporter of John McCain since day one, and I actually campaigned for him in New Hampshire.
So what was it about John McCain back then that appealed to you, that made you think that he could be a good future president? Be very specific here. What is it about him as a person that makes you think he could be a good president?
As a person, I believe his judgment and his character cannot be questioned. He's one of the reasons, you know, why I became involved in politics. I've really admired his ability to, you know, send himself to other sides of the aisle and to work with members of, you know, the opposing party. Being a California Republican, I know that it takes that, you know, to get things done. And I've always respected, you know, his ability to, you know, not necessarily go with what's been, you know, popular from him, you know, politically, or, you know, what was going to benefit his career, but what was the right thing to do to get things done.
So you like the fact that he has a history of going across the aisle to work with Democrats?
I do. I do. You definitely, I mean, you need to do that to get things accomplished.
There are a lot of conservatives, though, who are very suspicious of John McCain, in part for exactly that reason.
They are, but I think that his when you look at, you know, his voting record, it speaks for itself, and he has a conservative voting record that, you know, will satisfy those conservatives as
well. Now, Ryan, what is it specifically about Barack Obama as a person that makes you think he would be a good president? What is it that he's done, something like that, about him or about his past that leads you to support him?
Well, his life story is one reason why I'm very adamantly support him. He's someone who has come from nothing to rise to almost to the highest office in the United States, and he had to work to get there, and it was not easy for him. He's somebody who just finished paying off his college loans, something that a lot of people my age are going to have to be dealing with in a few years. And also, the first piece of legislature that he brought to the U.S. Senate in 2004 was legislature to increase Pell Grant funding to make college more affordable for students. And I think that that being the first thing that he brought into the United States Senate sends a pretty clear message about what his priorities are. And students are definitely high on his priority list because we truly are the future of this country.
There are some people who are worried that his resume is a little light for a president.
Well, that's actually another reason why I do like him, is that he is not a Washington insider. He's someone who, he's a normal, average person, and that, I mean,
an average
he was a little bit above average, but he's somebody who wasn't a Washington insider. He hasn't spent a lot of time in Washington, D.C. to get corrupted by lobbyists and other influences that have corrupted politicians in the past, and he doesn't have a lot of connections with people who would like to influence politics with money.
Ryan Loney is a delegate to the Democratic National Convention. He's a student at UC Davis and is Northern California Regional Coordinator with Students for Barack Obama. On the phone is Jennifer Rodriguez, a delegate to the Republican National Convention. She's chair of California Young Republicans. Jennifer, who would you like to see as vice president running with John McCain?
You know, I go back and forth. I'd like to see Pawlenty. I think he would make a good VP.
That's Tim Pawlenty.
I would definitely, I like Governor Chris from Florida, however I don't think he's, you know, made the short list, but I'd even, you know, be curious of a Romney ticket, but I think right now Pawlenty would be my number one choice.
There have been rumors, I don't know if there's any substance to them whatsoever, that John McCain has been looking at Joe Lieberman, who is a lifelong Democrat, but he's currently unaffiliated for other reasons. He's going to be speaking, I understand, at the Republican convention. How did you respond when you heard that rumor, if you heard it?
You know, I have a tremendous amount of respect for Senator Lieberman, but I do not think he wants the job. I think that he'll definitely be in Senator, you know, McCain's, you know, inner circle once he does, you know, get elected, and he'll be involved. But I do not think that he's vying for that spot.
If John McCain had not prevailed in the Republican primaries, who of the other candidates would you have wanted as your second choice, Jennifer?
Now, I haven't even thought about that. That would be a tough one. I was with John McCain since the beginning, and, you know, I didn't really have a second choice. I would have supported the Republican nominee, but definitely didn't have a second choice.
Ryan, who would you like to see Barack Obama choose as vice president with him?
Well, all of the people that are currently in the running would make excellent vice presidents. I don't have a particular preference myself. I think that Senator Biden, Governor Sebelius, or Tim Kaine, and especially Senator Clinton, any of those Democrats would make excellent vice presidents for that would compliment Barack Obama in a number of ways.
I know there was some bad blood among some supporters of Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton. You said that you thought that Hillary Clinton would be a good vice president. How would you actually respond if, and it doesn't seem very likely, but how would you respond if Barack Obama actually said Hillary Clinton is going to be the vice presidential nominee with me?
I would certainly support that. And she brings a lot to the table that a lot of people wanted to see when they were supporting her in the primary. And she brings a lot of different voters and a lot of different supporters and constituents into the party that we'd like to keep in the party. But also, I mean, I would be very supportive of that. And I think that it's been exaggerated a little bit by both the Republicans and the media, the tensions between the two candidates and their constituents. I don't see that there's tension in the people that I've worked with.
Yeah. Barack Obama is relatively young by standards of people who are, you know, serious candidates for president. And John McCain, if elected, would be, I believe, the oldest president to take office. Jennifer, you're a young delegate to the Republican National Convention. Do you think that's a problem in any way for John McCain?
Not at all. I think that, you know, he's shown in his life, you know, that he doesn't scare easily and he isn't going away quickly. And that hasn't been an issue with me at all.
And Ryan, what about Barack Obama's age? I mean, is there any sense in which you think young people are attracted to him, or a lot of young people are attracted to him, first and foremost because he seems younger than a lot of the other people who are running for president?
Well, I don't think age should be any barrier to running for office at a reasonable level. I mean, obviously, Barack Obama is old enough to be my father, so I consider him to be relatively old compared to myself. So I think that he would do an excellent job. He was born in the 60s. I mean, that was quite some time ago from my perspective.
Yeah. And I'm laughing because I was born in the 60s. Jennifer, you're off to St. Paul for the Republican National Convention. Will that be your first time at a convention?
It will be my first time, yes. Very excited.
And what role do you have?
Well, as chairman of the California Young Republicans, I'm heading out a little early. We have our national meetings that will take place the weekend before the convention. And then we're also very excited. The Republican Party is also putting on a GOP youth convention where we have young people coming from all across the country and they can, you know, see the convention at a more affordable price. And we have a program offered for them as well. So I'll be helping out with that prior to the actual my roles as delegate taking place on September 1st. So.
And Ryan, you're going to Denver. Is this your first convention?
Yes, this is not only my first convention, this will be the first time that I get to vote for a president, so it's
do you have
very
any,
exciting.
Do you have any specific roles at the convention beyond being a delegate?
Yeah, the role of being a delegate, I'm actually an alternate delegate, which is I will fill the space of another delegate on the floor if there's an absence, which there certainly will be, as there's a number of events going on at the convention in the surrounding areas, so I get to cast a vote, hopefully, to pick the nominee who is inevitably going to be Barack Obama, and also Senator Clinton will have many of her supporters will cast a symbolic vote to respect her candidacy and the historical aspect of it.
Well, thank you both very much for joining us and sharing what you make of the current political scene, and best wishes to you both in your respective conventions. Ryan Loney, delegate to the Democratic National Convention. Jennifer Rodriguez, delegate to the Republican National Convention. Thank you both.
Thank you. Have fun in Denver, Ryan.
Have fun in St. Paul. Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to Insight from KXJZ. Coming up, why some parents want the 3, 4, and 5-year-olds to attend an all-day immersion program in Mandarin Chinese. We'll be right back. You're listening to Insight from KXJZ. I'm Jeffrey Callison. We welcome your suggestions of topics and guests on Insight. Send them to insight@capradio.org. Coming up this afternoon from KXJZ News, a new study shows Medi-Cal patients are more likely to use the emergency room than others for non-urgent care, and that's putting a strain on already overcrowded ERs. That story later today on All Things Considered. What were you doing when you were 3 years old? Well, starting this fall, some local kids aged 3 through 5 will spend their days in a bilingual immersion program to help them quickly learn Mandarin Chinese. Why are parents interested in that? And what's it like learning Chinese when you're 3 and a native English speaker? On the phone is Melissa Ortman, Center Director of Knowledge Beginnings Roseville. It's a child care and early education center that is about to offer this bilingual immersion program in Mandarin. Melissa, welcome to Insight.
Hi, good afternoon.
Why do you think 3-year-olds would benefit from all-day immersion in Mandarin?
You know, studies show that the children learn a second language the easiest between the ages of birth through 5, because 70% of the brain development occurs before the age of 3. And learning the second language, they can learn it as if it's their first. They don't understand that it's a second language. They're not putting the rules into it like we do as an adult learner. It's very different how they learn it.
But it's one thing to jump from, say, English to Spanish or French or German, which also use the Latin alphabet, their Indo-European languages. Mandarin is a completely separate language in every way. Does that in itself make it harder for a 3-year-old to learn it, or do 3-year-olds not know or care?
They have no idea. Only an adult would know that has previous history and knows, you know, what that means. A child does not understand the difference between the languages. They know as they hear it. Like I said a little bit ago, that children learn through hearing it. As adults, learn it through the rules. So we're constantly trying to translate it back and forth between the English and Mandarin or English and Spanish. You know, what does that mean in English? Where children will not do that. They, if it sounds right, then that's how they learn it.
Why did Knowledge Beginnings Roseville choose Mandarin?
You know, because we feel that it's going to be, you know, through studies and a lot of research, we feel that it's going to be the next global language with China and everything becoming, you know, an economic powerhouse, basically. It's very important for our children to learn the Mandarin language. A lot of the families that I currently have, their families are in the business and technology world, and they already understand that, you know, they wish they would have known the Mandarin language and understand that the next 10 years is going to be very critical and that Mandarin is the language to learn.
Also with us is a parent whose daughter will attend this Mandarin immersion program at Knowledge Beginnings Roseville. She's Dina Udings. Dina, welcome to Insight.
Hi, thank you.
Why do you want your daughter, Tiana, who's 3 but just about to turn 4, why do you want her to learn Mandarin?
Well, mainly for my own personal reasons. I happen to be half Chinese, half Japanese. I'm 4th generation, so very much removed from you know, speaking either Chinese or Japanese and really being immersed in the culture. When my family came to the United States, it was to assimilate, and you came here to be in the U.S., so that's what they did. So for my daughter, being a quarter Chinese, when I heard of this opportunity, I just had to jump on it because it's a great opportunity for her to learn part of her own heritage and culture as well as the language that goes along with it. So I just thought it was an awesome opportunity for us.
Could you teach her Mandarin?
Oh, no. Oh, I can't even order food in Chinese. I mean, fourth generation, very much removed from speaking the language. My parents don't even speak it. So yes, it's a great opportunity.
What does your daughter say about this? Does she know she's going to be doing this immersion program in Mandarin?
Yes, she does. She's very excited about it. And with the Nickelodeon show Ni Hao Kai Lan, it's kind of like Dora the Explorer, but a Chinese version. She's been watching that in the afternoon, so she is aware that she'll be learning Mandarin, and she's very excited.
How well does she speak and understand English? Would you say she's advanced?
Well, I think everybody, or all the children at Knowledge Beginnings, they've just been given such a good foundation that she's right on par with all the other children. But what I've heard from her pediatrician and others that she is advanced compared to others that he's seen.
Earlier, Melissa Ortman said that there's interest in this from clients who work at places like Intel and other big technology and companies like that. Is that in your mind? And whether it is or not, how do you feel about people making, I guess, a business decision about the three-year-old child?
Oh, I thought, well, at first I had the same knee-jerk reaction when I heard it was Chinese as opposed to, say, Spanish. You know, why would they choose Mandarin? And I did some research, and I, too, saw that about one-fifth of the world's population speaks Mandarin. And the trend is leaning towards China as a powerhouse. So for her to have just an added benefit or an added skill in her hip pocket when she's so young is just such a great thing to have that I think it would just give her a leg up in the future when she can make her own choices of what she wants to do career-wise and in school.
Melissa Ortman, give us an idea of what it's going to be like for these very young children taking this immersion program in Mandarin. What will their day be like?
It will be, we'll have two teachers in the classroom and 20 children, and one teacher speaks only English to the children, and the other teacher speaks only Mandarin to the children in the classroom. So all day long, they're getting both languages. Miss Judith, the teacher in the doing the Mandarin portion, she'll have a small group, and they'll be doing finger plays and songs and stories and stuff, and it will be all in Mandarin. Lots of hand gestures so that they will understand, lots of repetition so that they can understand, start putting it together. And it is a full-time program, and that's one of the reasons is because repetition is how children learn. And then the other teacher will be speaking English only. So she'll be doing our regular preschool curriculum that we currently do here, getting the children ready for kindergarten, and that will all be in English. So all day long, they work together on that.
Are they translating each other, or are they doing completely separate things with the kids?
Completely separate things with the kids. They won't translate for them. The hand gestures, for instance, let's say Miss Judith says in Mandarin, you know, wash your hands. They may not understand the words that she's saying, but with the gesture of her rubbing her hands together and pointing to the sink, they will understand that. Mm. So it's just constant repetition like that. And, of course, a little bit of a nudge from the English teacher maybe to, you know, help out a little bit. I was able to watch a program that is currently doing it down in Sunnyvale, the same program, and I had they had been only doing it for 2 weeks. Children that had never spoken Mandarin at all were understanding just the table, you know, that they wanted more or servings and stuff in Mandarin. It was just awesome to see.
Now, we're just about out of time, so this will have to be very quick, Dina. But what happens after Tiana has been to this program? Once she's five and she goes to a regular school, I'm guessing there's no Mandarin there, and you can't speak Mandarin with her at home.
Well, I am looking into other opportunities to continue Mandarin for her. So hopefully she will have continuing education at some form in Mandarin. It might not be a complete immersion, but hopefully I will be able to find her something.
Very good. Melissa Ortman is Center Director of Knowledge Beginnings Roseville, which will soon offer September 8th a bilingual immersion program in Mandarin for 3 to 5-year-olds. And Dina Udings, who you just heard, a parent, her daughter Tiana, will attend that program. Melissa, Dina, thank you both very much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having us.
Yes, thank you.
Now, while the Mandarin Immersion Program at Knowledge Beginnings Roseville is the first in the region, I should note that another is scheduled to start in the new year at the Bergamo Montessori in Sacramento's Pocket neighborhood. That's Insight for today. I'm Jeffrey Callison. For more information about the guests and topics you hear, go to our webpage, capradio.org/insight. Coming up on KXJZ, online auction site eBay is lowering its seller fees for fixed-price sales to compete with rivals like Amazon. Plus, talent agency International Creative Management will pay a $4.5 million settlement for systematically discriminating against TV writers older than 40. All that coming up in Marketplace. Today's associate producers, Hawa Amin Arsala. She's now left us. Farewell, Hawa. She's back to Berkeley. Did a great job. Also, Ellie Fox and Lynn Weaver. Our technical director, Mark Jones. The assistant producer, Robin Souza. The senior producer, Jen Picard. And thank you for joining us.